Now it's time for Teacher Talk, James's thoughts and insights into teaching international students.
I'm pleased to welcome Miss Barbara Bray, a creative learning strategist at Rethinking Learning. She's also the host of a podcast called Conversations on Learning, and she is the co-author of Make Learning Personal and How to Personalize Learning. So check out her website, barbarabray.net. Welcome, Barbara.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
Now, you also have a Twitter chat you're telling me about. Can you tell us a little bit about the Twitter chat?
Yes, it's every other Monday. It's 7 p.m. your time in Toronto, and it's only 30 minutes, so three questions in 30 minutes, and it's around a topic that, you know, people tell us these really great topics. So next Monday, it's on empathy.
Nice, very nice. Now, Barbara, you are in California.
I'm in Oakland, California, where today it's very, unfortunately, smoky.
Yeah.
We have a lot of wildfires out here. It's very scary.
Yikes. All right. Well, you need some of our rain. We've been having a lot of rain.
Send it our way, please.
Yeah. Now, how did you get into podcasting?
Oh, well, let's see. I'm a writer. I love to write. And I was writing some blogs about, you know, different people. And I had mentioned to someone how I love the stories. And someone said, you know, you're a good interviewer. Why don't you take up podcasting? And that was about 2 years ago. And I kind of dabbled in it. And so I started it around May, a year and a half ago, I guess.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about your podcast? Because it's fantastic. You've got to listen to it.
Oh, thank you so much. I am what you call a connector. I just know lots of different people through social media and conferences. And some people, when they tell me their stories, I just said, we need to have a conversation about that. And that's what it is about. I ask them, excuse me, just 1 second.
Yeah, no worries. We're having a short break here, everyone.
That's fine.
Answer that phone.
No, I'm not going to answer it. I get a lot of calls from, I don't know who they are, but they constantly call. And I turn off every phone, but I forgot my Apple Watch.
That's good. I'm glad you got an Apple Watch. That's good.
I love them.
I'm an Apple guy.
Yeah, good. Me too. So let's see. So I started with my son is my sound engineer. And
good.
So we practiced, you know, just the idea of how we were going to do this. I have a WordPress site and I thought, I just want to just kind of play with it. And so we did a practice. And it turned out so good. I actually learned something new about my son, mainly by going through the conversations like you and I are doing right now and delving a little deeper. And so I just started reaching out to different people. And I've been lucky. Everybody's been so generous with their time. And the big thing that's different is I also create a blog post to go with it. Each of the blogs, podcasts have a post that the guest and I work really hard to put in pictures and take excerpts from the podcast, put them in there. And if they have videos, TED Talks, anything like that, I try to put them up. So it's all about showcasing the people I'm talking to. And yeah, it's fun. I don't know if you've seen.
Yeah, it's fantastic. There's a lot of amazing information there. You know, I've done a little bit of research and saw a little bit of the work. It's fantastic. So I highly recommend everybody checking that out as well.
I have one more thing.
Yeah,
is
sure.
I'm also on VoiceEd Canada. I don't know if you know that.
Wow.
Yeah, Stephen Hurley contacted me and said, hey, I like your show. Would you like to be on VoiceEd Canada? And I said, of course. So I've been there for about a year now.
Wow.
So I
great.
Have one of the pages there and he shows I think it's every Tuesday and Thursday, he puts up some of my podcasts.
And what have you learned by doing podcasts?
Is
there something that sort of sticks out in your mind, like an interview or something that maybe kind of changed your thinking, you know, because you've met some amazing people.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm learning how to become a better interviewer. I'm learning how to listen better. I'm not trying to think about what I'm going to say. I'm really trying to listen while they're talking. And I'll give you an example of one of them is Tom Murray, who's just an amazing person. And he did something where he would say, you know, Barbara, I really like da 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 da, you know, something like that. And he kept saying my name. And I went, that's clever. Because when he said my name, it piqued my brain and made me listen closer. So I turned that around now and I say, like, James, I really like what you're asking me. You know, I'm saying, so I'm really changing how I listen. And I think
that's a great tip for teachers because, you know, when you call on a student, if you call them by their name or even their nickname, it can really, you know, that they get that sense of connection.
Well, especially if you look at high school, they have so many kids and they don't know the kids' names.
Sure, yeah.
It's really, really important to build those relationships first and find something special and be able to call it up and say, hey, I heard about your soccer game. Or something, you know, and how you did really good, you know, that sense of connect, that connection you make is so important. And I'm trying to do that myself. I'm going to get better. I find that I still make some mistakes, but that's how you learn.
Now, you are an expert on learning. So
What is the future? I don't know about an expert.
What is the future of learning?
Well, I do talk about that. Only because I'm asked, and it to me, the future is here now, and we're not ready, and we're not preparing our students. And the idea is the future because it's the fourth industrial revolution. You know about that, right?
Maybe you can share that with the teachers.
Okay, well, what happened is when the first industrial revolution with steam and water, you know, came, everybody said, oh, we're not, that's terrible. We're going to have railroads. They're going to be, you know, just ruin everything. And then the second, you know, was automobiles and things were going to change. And then the third was the computers. Well, now the fourth industrial revolution is AI, robots, embedded software, and bitcoins and changing everything. Things are changing so fast, just like, you know, the Amazon Go, as an example. They have one right in my town where you can go and you have your phone and you can walk in, take something off the shelf and walk out and it automatically deducts it from your account. Right. You don't have, there's no cashier. So what does that mean? There's no cashier. So that job is gone.
Right.
And there's so many jobs that are changing because of this new technology that we have to determine what's going to happen to our kids if they're still training for, you know, going to school for jobs that are no longer there.
Yeah.
We have to do something about that. And one of them is the skills. So it's not going to be, I mean, I'll just give you an example. I get resumes every week. I don't open them up. I'm not even looking at resumes anymore. I'm looking at skills. I needed to hire a sound editor, so I went to Upwork. Do you know about that?
Upwork? No, no. Tell us about that one.
Upwork is it's one of those applications where people can come in and say, these are the skills I have. These are the jobs I've done and my experience. And then they tie them to someone like me who was looking for a sound editor and someone who could take so
it's
the
like
music.
It's like a part-time kind of job.
It's a freelancer.
Freelancing.
But the power of it is so big because it's not by, I'm not looking at where they went to school. I'm looking at their skills.
Right, right.
But we have to teach like that now.
Now, are you for coding in the classroom? You know, reading, writing, coding?
Well, coding's like another language.
Yeah.
I learned how to code when computers just came in. See, I was a ed technologist. That's how I got started, kind of. I was a teacher, but I really loved computers. I took them apart and put them back together again. I'm that I'm like that real geeky person, wow. You know? Yeah. I wanted to know, I learned how to develop databases. So I have my own program that I created and, I love that stuff. So I love coding, but that's because my brain works that way. Not everyone works that way. So if you start really young and you start with how to program, even using the spheros or, some very simple way of understanding how you can move an object, it intrigues kids. They want to know more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I've certainly seen that in certainly some of the amazing elementary schools that are being developed out there.
But it's like another language.
Totally.
And it's universal. It works with anyone who speaks any language. They just need to know. They need to be exposed to it and have some time to develop it.
Now, one of the things that I drew from your blogs was the joy of learning and how to bring that back. What would you say to new teachers who, you know, you've got kids in the ESL industry, they're adults, and, they feel the pressure sometimes in high school. They want to go to a good university for adults. They want to get a great job, and so they need to pass this standardized test. How do they bring that joy of learning to the classroom?
Well, not through standardized tests. but some people are very excited when they do well. So it depends on your personality. But the thing that I find is I'm doing something new, which is called Define Your Why. If you know who you are and you know your strengths, and you understand what your passions are, if you can have any way of exploring that passion and developing it, I don't care if you're a young kid or you're an adult looking for a job, but if you're working on your passion and you can be really excited about it, that's joy. And then you can share what you're doing. So like myself, I love to write and I want to push myself and become a better speaker. So I have to put myself out there. And, you know, it's not about one job anymore. It's about being the best you can be in whatever you are going to do. And so what are the skills are you going to need? How can you push yourself so you're a little bit out of your comfort zone and become better, whatever that means? And so let's say if you're a rock climber or some type of sport, push yourself, write about it, put a blog out there, tell about it, have a YouTube channel and tell about your process and have that so people see that you're passionate about something. Does that make sense? I mean, it's not just...
Sure, absolutely, yeah.
Not just taking a test and getting a grade. It's more than that.
But how would you talk to universities or companies who need to validate somehow? I mean, we're talking English as a second language. How can I know that this person can speak English and can function?
Well, if let's just say that person is a rock climber and they made a video and they had to speak in English. Right. And they're developing a recipe on something and had to do it in English. And they put that on their portfolio. I could hear them speaking English. If they had to write, have them write in English and then put it out there so it's available. Because what employers are doing now, they're going to social media, they're Googling you to find you. If everything is up there in a different language, and you say you can speak it, but there's no evidence of it, put it out there.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm a big fan of are digital portfolios. And I would love to see more assessment tools using digital portfolios where you can see a growth, where you can have that updated yearly, monthly as you're growing as a student, and companies kind of starting to request that. And actually, I think it would probably be best to start in universities. where you could ask for that type of assessment tool. It can be one part of it, and you can still have your standardized test because whatever they have a desire to have it. But the other part could be a digital portfolio.
Well, I think everyone should be doing them and starting them in very young. I don't know if you know what Reggio Emilia is. Have you ever heard of Reggio schools? They started in Italy after World War II, but they're basically doing portfolios, starting with preschool collecting evidence of growth.
Yeah, and exactly.
Some of it is, you know, you're taking a video, you're taking pictures, you're talking to the child. But if you start young and then this is something that you carry through K-12, then in the university, I'm actually in my program, it's called My E-Coach. That's another program I created. There is a group out of National University that uses my program to create portfolios. And I made that program mainly long ago before all these other tools because I was working in Oakland Unified School District. We needed the teachers to have a place to put up their lessons, but also to put up artifacts and evidence. And
how can we make universities change?
How
can we make them see the light, Barbara?
A lot of them are starting to change because they kind of have to. They're getting students not prepared. They're losing students who get very frustrated because one, the costs are so high and they're not, several students are dropping out saying I could do this without school. So it's going to be like supply and demand down the road. They're going to have to because it's not going to be relevant anymore.
And I really feel that this needs to start at the university level. I think that is the best place for some of these new assessment tools to be used. Now, what do you think, what is your feeling, and you've talked to a lot of educators, about the mobile devices in the classroom?
Well, I think it's crazy not to have them because they're going to use them anyway outside. If we don't teach them the skills on how to use them correctly, they're going to use them inappropriately and get into trouble.
France is banning the devices, and there's a lot of schools that are going what's called no tech. So there's no technology in their schools. I'm hearing this phrase come out, and I'm just shocked.
Well, you're not preparing people for the real world. I mean, the problem is if you want to keep a traditional system where the teacher's all in control and everything is teacher directed, you're going to ban devices. But if you really want people to have a voice and know how to use resources appropriately, like primary sources and things like that, you're going to have to give them access to all the tools. But you're also going to have to give them strategies on how to use them effectively and be safe online also.
Well, yeah, safe and being a good digital citizen. I think there's a fear, though, or there's a lack, maybe not a fear from teachers, maybe there's a lack of teacher training. What is your, you know, interviews and meeting with other teachers and educators, are they feeling that there's just not enough training in that ed tech world, or maybe there's just too much stuff?
Well, I think it's not only training, it's the amount of bureaucracy and mandates and lack of time. I'm just going to say this, to cover the curriculum, which drives me nuts, because that stuff they learn is necessary. If they spent more time teaching them how to use a device effectively, show them that what happens if they use it inappropriately, then they could teach the kids how to find the content, be less of this person standing up in front of the room telling them what they need to know and teaching them how to find the resources themselves. I mean, we're still, if the universities don't change, and many are starting to, they're starting to be more competency-based. They're starting to look at ways where people can even challenge a course. If we can make courses more project-based and more like challenges, I think MIT is looking at some of those strategies. where it's a real life challenge. Some are using the UN goals, which I, do you know about the UN Sustainable Development?
Please share that.
Oh, okay. This is really big, James.
Okay. All right. Okay.
excuse me for a minute. I'm going to cough. So.
We're going to talk about the UN goals. All right.
These are the UN Sustainable Development Goals designed in 2015 by 197 countries, including Canada. They are available. If you did a search on UN SDGs, they'll come up. And the first one is end poverty and no hunger.
Oh, I see.
Gender equality.
All right. Yeah. Those goals. Yeah.
Do you know about those?
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Okay. Well, if you made everything you do around real problems, you can take a global problem and work on it locally.
Right. Right.
So, everything can be tied into meeting the standards. You can have kids do no matter what age, real world project-based learning or passion-based learning. If they know they can make a difference, every child wants to make a difference. Every person wants to make a difference, but they give up and they're in a compliance system. We just have to figure out ways we can change this, and that can happen in universities. No, it's just harder. It's just a little more difficult.
Yeah, for sure. I don't want to give anything too much away about you, Barbara, but you did mention before you were a grandmother, and I want to ask you, how have you maintained this passion that you have?
Oh, please.
I mean, a lot of teachers out there are going like, you know, I'm 20 years and I'm just burned out. I'm tired and I want to retire and I want to get out of the business. And, you know, how did you keep that passion going?
I don't know. I'm probably nuts. That's why. My main thing is that I'm frustrated. I've been doing this for so long, trying to transform teaching and learning. And it seems like we went backwards during art in the United States. It was No Child Left Behind, which tended to leave poorer children behind and teachers behind, and it just didn't seem to work. So that's what kind of got me energized to do something and change things. So I'm kind of like I'm a disruptor, a radical, a little crazy, but I was like that as a teacher. And my main thing is, if I can make a difference, if I'm a good storyteller, if I can help people tell their stories and it helps change even one child or one teacher, I'll be happy. I guess that's just who I am. I just want to make a difference.
And let's leave it at that. I mean, that's a nice spot to end it. And you can hear more about Barbara and her podcast called Conversations on Learning. And it's on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher and all of that.
I think they have it linked with Rethinking Learning Podcast. So if you did a search or under my name. But I did call it Conversations on Learning. But
okay. But so we should search it as Rethinking Learning?
Yeah, I think the Rethinking Learning Podcast, I think, will come up.
Yeah, or Barbara Bray, Bray. Yeah. And it'll pop up as well. It's a great podcast, and you can get more of these fantastic insights with Barbara. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me here. This is wonderful.
Have you downloaded the Study It ESL textbooks yet for your classroom? The Study It textbooks are the first ever digital and interactive textbooks. Once downloaded, Wi-Fi is no longer required. Each book contains video and audio exercises, detailed grammar keynotes, reading and writing assignments, and amazing speaking projects. Grammar, conversation, pronunciation, business English, and listening textbooks are available. Visit www.studyitbooks.com for more information.